Three defeats from two for the second season in a row makes for pretty poor reading for any Reading fan, but a spending splurge late in the transfer window has many looking up rather than down. Welcome to the Tarleton Podcast, episode 198, with your host, as per usual, Mark Mayo, myself. And joining me this week is, well, it's Sunday night now, so I'm guessing you've just got home from the long trek up to the Humberside northeast sim. Simeon Pickup, aka Bucksfoil, the editor of the Tarleton, joins me this evening.
Hello. Always takes ages to get back from Hull. It's one of those that you don't really look forward to. I guess you've got to set the whole day aside just to get up there and back. But it's good to be back on the road again. Good to have an away day finally after going without it for months of the year. But there we go. Frustrating day, but we go again next week.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And well, we go again in just a couple of days' time on the road over to Wickham and, of course, Cardiff on the weekend. But let's talk about that 2-1 defeat it was for Reading on Saturday. And before we do that, another hearty thanks to all our Patreon subscribers once again, just as a way of saying thank you to ourselves, your way of just tipping us and that virtual tip jar we always talk about as a thank you and our thanks back to you to anyone who continues to subscribe to that. And hopefully our coverage over the sort of transfer deadline day and the start of the season is doing you proud. And with that in mind, let's jump in to the recap.
View from the Tarleton End. Recapping this week's championship action.
So Sim, this was it's kind of the anti-climax after the anti-climax, isn't it? We had the Sheffield Wednesday game where we started off a bit of hope, a bit of expectation with the young players and hoping that they were going to find a way to hit the ground running. That didn't turn out to be the case. We've then gone and spent a lot of money, and we'll talk about that a bit more in news bites, exactly where that's gone. But so early in this game, we conceded. Okay, you can get over that. We conceded again, and then we have a sort of fight back, which ultimately futile with the consolation goal and hitting the crossbar as well. But really, just Reading learning their lessons as to how not to start a game.
Yeah, I think it's a psychological thing, really. To be honest, there's a lot of optimism, as you say, obviously because of the new signings and the general mood around the club. But at times like that, perhaps even more so than usual, you need to keep your focus. You need to make sure you're on your game, and just little things like the goalkeeper covering his near post in the opening minutes, picking up a striker who's got a free header not that long later in the game. It's just basic stuff, really. And I think really overall it's Jose Gomez's job, really, to manage these expectations. When a lot of players come in, when there's a big change around at the club, it's really on him to make sure that everyone's focused, everyone's really set on what their job is, and they're mentally right for games like this, because Reading were perfectly capable of getting 3 points here today, yesterday rather, perfectly capable of going up there and playing well throughout the whole 90 and getting the 3 points. But if you're not mentally set properly, you don't do yourselves any favours, and you just undermine yourselves and make it that bit more difficult to get points out of the game.
Yeah, and that sort of mental strength that you need, you can almost see it in the first goal as the shot comes in from Grzycki. It's a massive Joao Virginia error. The goalkeeper, the young goalkeeper, in only his second competitive start in the senior game, he gets caught at the near post, and you know, Jared Bowen taps in the opener, and you can see on Liam Moore's face the sort of disappointment straight away as his hands go to his head. And so soon into the game, Reading are 1-0 down. At the same point, though, the defending is still pretty poor outside of the goalkeeper sort of domain. The fact that Grzycki is able to get the shot in from that position, the fact that Bowen is the first man to get to it with no player around him. And then for the second goal again, I think it's Liam Moore kind of loses his man. Liam Moore hasn't started the season well, let's face facts. Virginia is the one that a lot of fans are going to, especially after that first goal. And the defending, to be honest, I'm taken by surprise that the defending is so bad, because it was good last year. And we've got back the original centre-back pairing, Miazga and Moore, for it. Yes, we had an amazing goalkeeper last year, Premier League standard goalkeeper. Now we've got a sort of you know, let's face it, under 23 standard goalkeeper. So it makes a difference in that sense. But really, I didn't quite see this defensive downfall coming.
I guess I didn't either, really, to be honest, especially when you've got individuals like Morgan Miazga in there and Yeardom as well, obviously. But the more I think about it, one of the most important things last season defensively was that we had the same back five constantly, week in, week out. You go back to the Paul Clement era and we were constantly chopping and changing, and the Abstam era as well, of course. But you go to the Jose Gomez era and it was always Blackett on the left, Yeardom on the right, Martinez in goal, Moore and Miazga as centre halves. Now we've got not a hugely different defence, not a hugely different back five. At the end of the day, it's only one new player who's come into that from outside the club in Virginia, but there's still a new left back. The centre backs are switched over and a new young, inexperienced goalkeeper in there. And when you add up these little problems, these little things that kind of disturb the rhythm and the cohesion of a defence, then perhaps it's unsurprising that you're going to get little errors and little stupid mistakes creeping in from the goalkeeper, from the defenders, from whoever. Going forwards, we just need to come up with a proper combination. I'm not sure about Moore being on the right and Miazga on the left. They both seem unsure of it in game, and to be honest, I'm surprised that Gomez carried on with that yesterday, having seen that it was such a flawed idea in the Sheffield Wednesday game. So hopefully it's something that he's going to review and come back to, and hopefully Moore can go back onto the left. But even then, you got to decide who's the goalkeeper going forward. Hopefully Blackett can come back in on the left as well, and we can really come up with a consistent set of defenders going forwards.
With the centre-back thing, I mean, it's probably not a brilliant sort of discussion topic to get into too much without the video footage to kind of back it up and point it out. But I'm loath to point out that, in my opinion, it's kind of not the sort of thing that I think is too important, whether you're left or side or right side of centre-backs. If any, you know, five-a-side defenders or people with more experience than me are happy to dispute that, I'm happy to hear it. But that is, I think it probably is, you know, a bit more fundamental, the things that are going on at the moment. And maybe it is just the goalkeeper. I hope, you know, Rafael is the Brazilian goalkeeper we signed as a free transfer after he left Sampdoria on Wednesday last week. Just to run through the other debutants, Rafael wasn't on the bench. It was Walker on the bench with obviously Virginia starting. Then we had Pele, the centre mid on loan from Monaco, started. Lucas Boyer, the Torino winger, started on the left flank. Lucas Jau up front, who scored the goal. We'll talk about the sort of the general sense of how we got back into the game. But a quick word on Boyer in particular, and you know, we'll talk about George Puskas in a bit as well later. But Boyer, it was curious that he was the one dragged off at half time. Do you think that was a kind of fair enough decision, or was it a bit harsh, or was he just unfortunate?
I think it was a little bit odd, to be honest. He looked perhaps one of the brighter players in the first half, but then again, it's hard to really properly compare them, given that the whole team was so poor. I don't think it really necessarily reflects too badly on him that he was the one taken off. It was presumably more of a tactical thing. He did have one bright moment in the first half where he burst up the pitch really intelligently, really good technical ability, and then found Lucas Schau at the back post. But I guess on the whole, it's not a big enough sample size to really judge from him properly, especially when it's his first game in English football. He's still got a lot of settling in to do. So hopefully in a game where the team in general is playing better and he's going to get more service himself naturally, then hopefully we can see some more of him. I think the big problem, though, is Pele, to be honest. He's certainly got the technical ability, sitting in front of the back four, trying to kind of balance out that midfield three that we had, but he just seemed far too slow on the ball, far too lazy, essentially, in possession. He got caught too often, and he didn't use it quick enough. He didn't move the ball forward enough quickly, with enough purpose. Contrast that with Lewis Baker, who is really good at those switches of play, of just finding people higher up the pitch that little bit quicker. And that's certainly something that Pele's got to work on at the moment, because it really held us back in the time he was on the pitch, to be honest.
But one midfielder who did kind of, you know, stick out when it came to the fight back that we made, getting the goal back through Zhao in the second half, was John Swift. He just appeared to be a bit more creative and it playing in behind the striker. And after Puskás came on in the second half, I'm interested to know exactly how that set up when we had two on the pitch. And you know, with Swift and Zhao, it seemed like there was a decent amount of chemistry going on there for their first time together.
Yeah, just on the setup, I'm not really entirely sure what Jose Gomez was going for, to be honest. It seemed at times a little bit like a kind of 4-4-2 diamond with almost Zhao in behind Mate and Puskás, which didn't really strike me as a logical thing going forwards. But yeah, it was kind of hard to pick up, and Swift himself kind of seemed to be on the left of the midfield, whether it was a midfield three or more of a 4-4-2 diamond, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, he looked a lot freer, he looked a lot more creative, a lot more positive in that second half, perhaps just generally being boosted by the team being lifted in general. If he was more confident and he's able to kind of come up with those key moments, and it was a really good assist from him for Zhao. And the thing is, even when we do have these bad days, even when we do have an off day in the first half or across the entire game, Swift is capable of coming up with moments like that, and you just got to take the negative with the positive with him, and just keep him in the side, keep him confident, play to his strengths, and he will come up with moments like that.
And if it, you know, theory holds that if he is having a bad day, we have someone like Charlie Adam off the bench, who came on again at Hull, and you know, the likes of Josh Barrett, Michael Olise as well. You've got creative options there, and Swift being the lead man in that at the moment is something that I'm relatively content with. As I said earlier, George Puskás did come off the bench and he hit the bar late on. We'll talk about him in just a moment in Mailbag, because that is pretty much a subject that a lot of fans have gotten into. But generally speaking, I think from this game, it's just the lesson to learn is start better, and that is something that Jose Gomez picked up on when speaking after the game, and we'll hear from the coach now.
The football is... We must give everything that we have inside us when the referee gives the first whistle. We can talk today about two completely different games, the first half and the second half, and the big difference was the spirit that we fought in the individual challenge, that we fought or not in the for the second balls, and this did the difference, you know. These kind of things you must fight, and championship again. I'm not tired to say this and repeat and repeat. We can play, but first we must fight. Otherwise, it's impossible to win. In the first half, I didn't like at all, and the second half we could even win, because we create a lot of chances, we play better, we won 95% of the second balls, and the team was completely different, and it wasn't because I'll drop a bit their lines, it was because we behave different way. We turn on the fight spirit, and in the championship, you can, if you want to achieve to our target and to be in the top of the table in the end of the season, we must switch on the fight spirit from the beginning. Even in the warm up, we must be ready for the challenge that the championship games always have.
Okay, Sim, let's round up the recap with a quick look at the championship as a whole. This sort of discussion part of the show I want to get our teeth into probably a bit more later in the season, as it becomes, you know, apparent which sort of end of the championship we're going to be battling in particular. But at the moment, the teams with two wins, Sheffield Wednesday and Charlton, the teams with two defeats, Stoke, Blackburn and Reading. And what's the kind of sense you're getting from the championship, the quality of it at the moment?
It's an odd one, really. Sheffield Wednesday, obviously a team that people didn't really fancy as much going into the season, what with their manager problems. But I guess when you do have problems like that, sometimes they can pay off quite well, actually. when teams really kind of respond to the almost a siege mentality, and the new manager comes in without any pressure, and they were impressive against us. What I would say in general about the table is it can be very kind of distorted this early in the season. You go back to this time last year, and I think Bolton were up in the top six, and Norwich were struggling. And obviously go to the end of the season, and that was completely different. So I'm not reading too much into it, but we do need to get a quick start, and hopefully that can happen quite quickly.
Yeah, it is obviously I think the table is that old adage of 10 or 12 games is the one you want to wait until you have a serious look at it. Generally speaking, on the Championship, my sort of opinion at the moment is that it's changed a little bit from last year. Last year, I think, was a bit more wild. There were a lot of clubs who had spent a lot of money, a lot of, you know, quickly built teams and everything like that. And the fact that you've got Sheffield Wednesday have started strongly, and, you know, not trying to read too much into it, but a lot of teams, because they haven't had much money to spend over the summer, it has kind of galvanised them, as you were talking about. It has, you know, made them a stronger unit. A team without much change is better to get its head down and just get the basics right and develop a more consistent tactical shape and identity, which, you know, I think that will play out in a various number of ways over the course of the season. But it just makes it, in my opinion, a little bit tougher for Reading as a team that have made some late changes. And we're going to talk about those late changes now as we go into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Kicking us off this week then, mailbag, as for those who missed last week's show, it's been brought forward as we kind of shake up the order somewhat, and starting us off this week is Scott from the States, who's asked, how do we use Puskás and Joao together to get the best out of them, i.e. scoring boatloads of goals? And on the same topic, Mark Nevitt has said, is it time to revert to an old school two up front? 4-4-2 was good enough for the 106 team. Why persist with one up top when we need goals? Or we could play three centre backs, two wing backs, three in midfield and two up top, like sort of 3-5-2. Also, he says to switch the centre-backs back to their preferred sides, as you were talking about earlier, Sim. Puskás and Joao, then, early impressions from the whole game. How do you think they're going to be able to play together?
This is an interesting thing tactically for me, because what I'd always thought going into this game, and I guess going into bringing in Puskás and Joao in the first place, is that I always thought Reading would be playing one up top, and it would be kind of either Puskás or Joao. They wouldn't be partnering each other, because we had enough options behind them to maybe play a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, something like that. But Reading looked far more effective on Saturday when they went two up top, when they were a lot more direct. They got the ball in a lot quicker to people like Puskás and Joao, and Mate as well, for that matter, really being a lot more direct, getting the ball into them quicker, and it caused a lot of problems, which is a little bit of an odd thing for Gomez, considering that he obviously wants us to keep the ball that bit more and not necessarily be direct, but be a bit more careful with the ball and use it properly and a bit more with a bit more composure. I guess it's a formula for away from home, going two up top and being that little bit more direct. I'm interested if we're going to perhaps change it around at home, particularly with the Cardiff game coming up, and I think Charlton is our next home game after that. So perhaps it'll be more of a 4-2-3-1 or something like that. But then again, as Mark mentions, going to more of a 3-5-2 could be an option. I'm not sure if we've really got the wing-backs for that. I'm not too sure about Omar Richards looking after that left side on his own. Andy Yeardon perhaps a little bit better on the right, but getting three men in the midfield behind Joao and Puskás could be a good system in some matches, but again, we'll have to wait and see.
I mentioned on last week's show that I thought the whole idea of signing Joao was that he was the one man that Gomez could think, you know, let's put him in the team, I can trust him, I've scouted him, he's the one I want, put him in and we'll be fine. It's, you know, kind of thrown out the window when we go and spend even more money on a different striker. And Puskás, from the reports, obviously we've not really seen him yet, so I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but from the reports, sounds like he's sort of workhorse, hustling, harrying sort of striker who can hopefully get on the end of things, whereas Joao, a bit more of your target man, technical ability, not necessarily going to run around so much. That therefore, there is a way of putting them together. It's not quite your little and large sort of strikers of old that perhaps a 4-4-2 relies on, but, you know, it's interesting. I think that you're talking about playing a diamond against Hull in the second half, and that to me sounds quite plausible, because 4-4-2, we don't have the wingers for a 4-4-2, really, when you consider especially that Mo Barrow's on his way out, which we'll talk about in a bit later in the show, but Mate isn't a 4-4-2 style winger, he's a 4-3-3, a much more attacking winger than that. And then after that, I think we're a bit thin on the ground, so maybe just going a bit narrow. I'm sure Gomez has got a plan, and I think what it sounds like against Hull is we're just going to be pretty flexible and rotate around the front line and, you know, have a very modern approach in that sense. You mentioned Andy Yeardom. AD tweeted us saying, should Yeardom have had more than a 6-day rest between seasons? Yeardom, who was at the African Cup of Nations with Ghana, has come back into the team. He's not looked great, has he, Sam?
No, he's just looked a little bit off the pace, to be honest. And I think going back to pre-season, I think we were out in Spain and he joined the team late and then immediately went into pre-season. Immediately started playing far too quickly, really didn't have enough of a break, as you say. That's the kind of thing that does pay off over the course of a season. I guess you have a few players that can manage big workloads like that. People like Chris Gunter, who has absolutely amazing stamina over the course of a season, but it will take its toll on other players. And we may have to just rest Yeardom a little bit more than we'd like to. You go back to this time last year when he was playing pretty much every minute of every game. It was a while before he was rested. So perhaps we're going to have to bring in someone like Tenno Watson or Teddy Howard to just give him a bit of a breather and to really ease him into the season rather than rushing him too much. But in people like Teddy Howe and Tenno Watson, we do have some decent options on the right. It's not like in the last couple of years where if we've had one injury at fullback, then it's completely ruined the defensive shape and we've had to completely change things around. We do have players that can come in. I think particularly Teddy Howe, who looks really attacking, really wants to get forward in a way that's quite similar to Yeardom. So that's encouraging and obviously good from a youth point of view, bringing in someone younger and giving them a chance in the first team.
I think it was the season before last where it was Gunter or bust, effectively, wasn't it? We had one right back and three left backs was what we were going with, which, you know, didn't work, frankly, given the season we had. So I expect Howe to play the Wickham game at the very least, and you know, it'll be an interesting sign of who Gomez rates more, should he pick one of Howe or Watson over the other, because I think it'll be silly to keep playing Yeardom just for the hell of it in that sort of game. 5 past 5 tweets are saying, do you think it's just a case of patience and playing time for things to click, or does something need to change, especially at the back? Quick answer to that. I think at this stage of the season, you can only really say it's time. Michael Kemp also says, massively optimistic compared to a year ago. It's a long season, comedy first goal against Hull, but these things happen, and the keeper is on a steep learning curve. Rather give one game too many than less. Lucas Joao looks fantastic. Give it 12 games, as Steve Coppell always said. And Sim, we have our final point/question of the day, and this comes from eBiscuit, who emailed us in. And this was a fantastically worded email and an essay, as one word of putting it. But so I've kind of edited it down, but it makes a very good point. So I'm going to give you the best bits here. So thank you very much for that, eBiscuit. It says, Well, not the start of the season we hoped for, but in a glass half full kind of way, it sounds like that second half against Hull was actually quite encouraging. Appalling refereeing and the woodwork once again doing for us, alluding to what we haven't mentioned yet was that Yaku Mate had a penalty shout turned down. Meanwhile, what I find distinctly discouraging is the continued dismissive tones the so-called pundits have to our club and their collective woeful expert predictions. We're finishing 24th this season, apparently, so we may as well just pack it in and not bother turning up for the remaining fixtures. and who, more so than any others, personifies this open prejudice against our club, step forward our favourite Sky Football League know-it-all, Mr. Dave Prutton. I'm pretty sure this prank predicts us to lose every single game week in, week out, no matter how we're actually playing any previous results. So, in my mind, it's time we call this bloke out. May I propose you a weekly column, Prutton Watch perhaps, where we track Dave's disdain for all things Reading FC and plot them against actual results. Well, Dave Prutton, as a former, you know, Swindon, Nottingham Forest and Leeds midfielder off the top of my head, certainly isn't one who you know, has a natural affinity with the club, and it seems to him that he does generally pick us to lose. And the question for me with this, you know, I'm not going to argue with the point that he does tend to pick us to lose, and I'm sure there are many reasons for that, but the question for me, Sim, is that, is this a bad thing? Do we actually want the media to be hyping us up and picking us out, or do we actually want to kind of, you know, be the one that's doubted, be the team that, you know, maybe teams turn up and think they're going to easily stroll past us and we surprise them, be the surprise package? And I think that's part of the, for me, that's always been part of the joy of being a Reading fan, is that it's kind of our little secret in a sense. We've never had a team that's predicted to do well that's done well. All the teams that have done well have always been, you know, underdogs. And that's sort of a factor that this season has carried over. And in a sense, I'm not too mad about it.
Yeah, I don't think it matters a huge amount either way. I mean, you get some not very good pundits out there, to be honest. People who just don't really do their research.
Sorry? Danny Mills. Sorry, I was just saying the word Danny Mills. I can't think of why I was saying the word Danny Mills, but Danny
just,
Mills.
Just happened to say Danny Mills. Okay. yeah, you do get some pundits that just don't do their research. On a serious note, Danny Mills, who has described Sheffield United as a very direct, did he say long ball team or direct team? Something like that.
And yeah, there was an article, just to clear this up, there was an article on Danny Mills being an awful pundit on, I think it's 442 recently, which, I mean, I must say that personally, I was happy to see it, having thought that for some time. So that's the reason for that sort of joke.
Yeah, absolutely. You get some pundits who are just not informed properly, and I think they just get one idea set in their mind about a manager or a player or a club and just trot it out each time. In this case, from Prutton, it's that Reading aren't very good. Obviously, that's not an awful thing to think when you consider how bad we've been in the last couple of years. It's not completely inaccurate.
Maybe he listens to the podcast.
Absolutely. But pundits just need to give some better insight, to be honest. They need to actually just look into what they're talking about. The more you get of things like this, the more the manager is able to really kind of create a siege mentality. I think it was a couple of years ago, the Norwich game, I can't remember who their manager was, I think it was Neil Adams or someone.
Yeah, it was Adams.
Who said after the game where we won at Carrow Road that Norwich fans shouldn't be seeing their team lose to a team like Reading or something like that. And Steve Clark, I think, was the manager by the time of the next game, pinned it up in the dressing room and fired up the players so much that they went out and completed the double over Norwich. It's things like that that really annoy the players as much as the fans. I think we sometimes like to think of the players as being a bit distant and not really kind of emotionally attached in the same way as us. But when they do get written off and frustrated, it can pay off on the pitch. It can really fire them up and inspire them to that little bit more effort. So if we do stay up or get top half or, God forbid, top six, then maybe we'll have Dave Prutton to thank.
Yeah, and to add to that point, I think when you have championship pundits, rather, I mean, kind of like referees, as I almost tripped over my words there, and say that when they're in the Championship and they do well, then they get picked up and they get moved to the Premier League, and then you get a new Championship pundit. Like, I think Liam Rossinia was one of the most thoughtful pundits for a number of years while he's been on Sky, and now he's been picked up by Derby as an analyst, basically, and said, go and do your understanding the tactical side of the game job, but for us, and don't tell anyone else about it. And therefore, you know, you get a new pundit coming in. So it's just part and parcel of being in the Championship. It's part and parcel of being a Reading fan. Pundits, generally speaking, favour the bigger teams, in my opinion. And And as I say, I'm not too... Oh yeah, it's annoying, but I'm not too upset that it happens to Reading, because frankly, it's been happening since day one of the football club being in this sort of level. So we'll move on now and talk about news bites, because there has been some transfers that you might have heard of on the news recently.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So, five signings in 3 days to greet Reading's final transfer business. Very much out of the blue, in the sense that Lucas Joao, Pele, the midfielder, and Raphael, the goalkeeper we've just been talking about, arrived on the Tuesday. And then George Puskas rocking up from Inter Milan for £7.5 million. Not really too much detail about that the following day. And then on deadline day was, I wouldn't call it a shock move, because it, you know, obviously one we'd all been thinking about and one that we'd hoped happened. But I think Ovi Ejaria's loan signing from Liverpool, I think that's with a view to a permanent move as well, basically came about on deadline day, because Liverpool had hoped he was going to move permanently and no one had come in for him. But Sim, a flurry of activity in the final week of the window that, well, basically none of us saw coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all knew that we needed maybe two or three more signings if we could get them, if we could afford them. But I say particularly with a new goalkeeper. Actually, go back a few weeks and Virginia was set to be the number one, Walker the number two. We didn't have the money for another goalkeeper, but somehow we've managed to find it. I'm not entirely sure how. I think these signings are perhaps a little bit more thrifty than we're being led to believe. I mean, Raphael came in on a free, Pele on a loan, Ejaria on a loan. It looks like the two permanent signing strikers were not too much money paid up front, and then we can balance it out over the next couple of years. We must have done something to just change the accounting books around a little bit, just to really manage our finances properly over the next couple of years. I'm not entirely sure what, but to be honest, when we have Nigel Howe in charge, I have the faith that he's looking after stuff like this, and he's sure that we can afford it. It is a little bit frustrating. Well, it's very frustrating that these players came in right at the end of the transfer window, when obviously you want people like Pele and Puskas and Boye as well settling in with a couple of weeks to go before the season starts, given a bit of pre-season as well. But when you do have these tight FFP restrictions, which to me are a little bit, they just seem more ridiculous by the year, to be honest. When you do have them, you have to properly work around them, and it is gonna frustrate. It is gonna hold us back a little bit, certainly this season and perhaps next season as well.
What more wider point on FFP? I thought the idea that it was going to stop clubs like Bury and Bolton having the time that they're having, but alas, you know, here we are. And the principle, you know, on the basis it does stop those clubs, was something I backed, but Reading are having to are finding a way, and it's almost like a light bulb flicked on over someone's head about 10 days ago, and they thought, hang on, let's do it this way and it'll work out. And maybe it's coincidence, maybe it's not, who knows, it's just how it's happened. And you know, we got a pretty decent squad out of the end of it. Whether it's the Reading way, I'm not entirely sure, because one of the things that happened on deadline day that very much would have been the Reading way was Danny Loader moving to Wolves. This was a transfer that was scrapped at the last minute. Loader had his medical, we're led to believe. Personal terms was agreed. A fee, multi-million pounds, was agreed. And then apparently Reading's owner, Dai Young, upped the price at the last second. Jose Gomez didn't pick him for the whole game. He wasn't in the squad. After the game, he said, I just wanted to let the kid breathe and recover. Then we'll see. Maybe in his head, he had a good opportunity for his career. And when this happens, the players feel frustrated. We need to give him time to recover. Sim, this is Wolves' interest in Loader was known for a while, and it's the typical sort of deadline day move when they realise maybe we got a few million quid hanging around, let's throw it on this youngster who we've been tracking. But for Reading to kind of green light this and then stop it at the last second, it's almost like there's so many ways that could have come about. Maybe that we realised it was pointless in terms of FFP. Maybe Dai Young hadn't really agreed to it beforehand. maybe we had a signing coming in, maybe we had other players going out. It's just a odd situation.
Yeah, absolutely. The other factor here, of course, is the reported move for Kennedy that apparently didn't come about. It seemed heavily rumoured for a lot of deadline day. It looked like it was going to happen at one stage. But then towards the end of the day, as you got closer to 5 o'clock, it looked like he just decided he didn't want to come to the Championship.
This is the Chelsea winger Kennedy.
Chelsea winger Kennedy, who was on loan at Newcastle last season, I think, would have been a fantastic signing for us. But we weren't able to get him in on loan, annoyingly, and perhaps we were waiting on that to happen before we let Daniel Odegaard go. So we had that extra attacking option in the squad, so that we could then let Loder go. I think from the point of view of the owner as well, it's interesting because he seemed to do a similar thing with Yaku Mate back at the end of January. He looked set for an exit. I forget the team that came in for him and apparently had a deal agreed for him. I think it was in France. He was going to leave permanently, but...
It was France, yeah.
But Yonge seemed to... intervene in that and cut the deal before it could happen, which I find interesting that he's seemingly got such a specific interest in football. I'm not sure if that's something to be positive about or a little bit apprehensive about, that the owner is apparently intervening directly in footballing matters. At the end of the day, it's his money and he doesn't seem to be doing anything so far as, say, picking the team or anything. But if he is coming in last minute and intervening directly and quite heavily, it's something we need to keep an eye on. Not something to be worried about at the moment, perhaps, but it's a slight pattern of behaviour at the moment that we need to keep an eye on.
It's interesting. I'd be much more worried if he was coming in to make sure we sold players as a kind of panic button, you know, or if alternatively players were coming to sign and then at the last minute we pulled the plug. The idea that we're deciding not to sell one of our star academy products at the last minute is probably the least worrying scenario as a way of doing that. I mean, personally, the idea of Loder going, him going to Wolves and sitting in their under-23s for a year probably wouldn't have really helped his progress, but then being in the Reading team hasn't helped his progress. I don't believe he's a better footballer now than he was when he first came in. So it's a case of hoping that it clicks one day with Loder. And yes, he's young. Yes, he has time, but Reading, as they've proved over the last few days of the window, don't necessarily think that the club had much time, and signing players like Zhao and Puskas knocks him right down the pecking order. So we'll have to see what happens with him. Maybe he's going to bump up the pecking order because Mo Barrow appears to be off. Obviously, transfer deadline has passed for us, but for European clubs it hasn't. And he's heading off to Turkey by the looks of it. Derby failed in a deadline day bid. Jose Gomez confirmed after the whole game that Barrow is in talks with going, and it seems like it's going to happen, Sim. So what's your sort of take on the Mo Barrow, effectively, career coming to an end at Reading?
Not too annoyed, to be honest. He's a player that's... He has a habit of coming up with some really good moments. Obviously, the goal against Wigan, the goal against Ipswich as well last season, and more generally, his link-up with Mate in the last couple of weeks of the season was obviously really good, but you look over the course of his entire Reading career and just wasn't consistent enough. He was incredibly frustrating. First season, he seemed to play without fear to the most extent out of the couple of seasons that he had at Reading. But as his time went on at the club, he seemed to just become less and less confident. He didn't take well to Paul Clement coming in, that's for sure. But even when Jose Gomez was here as well, he seemed to not quite be the same player overall. He didn't seem to be that positive, that kind of player that really wants to take people on and create things. Because at one stage he looked unplayable at times with his pace. He really just loved to run at people, which was great to see. But I think particularly tactically, when we moved away from having proper out-and-out wingers as we used to, that didn't help him. Gomez has never been one for proper orthodox wingers who stay wide and hug the touchline and really try and stretch the play, which for me is Barrow's strength. and moving away from that and putting Barrow in a more central position just didn't really pay off for him. So tactically, it's the right move in terms of getting someone out who doesn't fit the system, getting rid of someone as well who's not consistent enough, and hopefully getting a decent amount of wages off the book as well. I don't know what he's been paid, but having come in fairly recently in the Gourley era, he'll probably be on a decent amount of money, especially coming from Swansea, a then Premier League club as well. So hopefully it's a move that makes sense all around.
Yeah, agreed on the fact that Gomez ultimately doesn't really see too much point in playing your traditional winger, and if we're heading to that diamond we mentioned earlier in the show, then he won't really have a part to play in it. And I mean, Barrow, he's had some fantastic moments at Reading. I remember the winner at Ipswich last season was the exact sort of goal that probably only he could have scored at that moment out of the players that Reading had. And it showed his quality, but it also kind of magnified what he didn't have, and what he just completely lacked for me was a finish. In terms of his balls in, I think generally they were decent. Obviously, rapid pace, dribbling, relatively decent for a player who obviously just knocks it and runs. But it's so many times he would just miss a relatively easy chance inside the area. And that just, you know, those sort of snapshot finishes that the best strikers can finish and that the worst wingers certainly can't finish is just an incredibly depressing thing to watch when it happens live in front of you. And I think it's the sort of moment that really kills the team's momentum as well. So that's kind of why I've got the opinion of Mo Barrow as the championship Theo Walcott in effect.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back to what you said about chances there, I think it says a lot that what will go down as being his last appearance at Reading, the Sheffield Wednesday game, he did miss two really good opportunities in the first half with the one that was that probably should have been a penalty when Andy Yeardon hit the ball against someone's hand on the goal line. Barrow really should have scored the rebound from that, and then had a really good chance in the second half as well. For all the times that he's going to come up with a really good goal like the Ipswich one, just going to that Ipswich goal specifically, you could have quite easily seen him just blasting the ball over the bar or putting it wide or tamely at the goalkeeper. He's that kind of person who's just not reliable in front of goal. He's not reliable in the final third. And it's the kind of player that we need to move on, really, that we need to look higher than if we can bring in Boye and bring him into the side and really get him firing. Then hopefully he can be a lot more consistent and just really put behind us what we had with Barrow.
Well, the sort of players that are going to be replacing Mo Barrow might be featuring at Adams Park on Tuesday night. So let's go into the big game preview now and discuss the couple of games that are coming up for Reading this week.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Tuesday, 7:45, away to Wickham. It is the Carabao Cup first round, and Reading have a local derby to enjoy to an extent. It's probably a sort of rivalry that you'd have between sort of two opposing tea rooms, but nonetheless, it's a derby to enjoy. It's a local trip for Reading fans to get down. It's 1,800 tickets have all sold out. However, if you're listening to this on Monday, the club have announced a further 300 are going on sale on Monday morning, so there's a chance to grab a couple there. Certainly I'll be trying to jump in on that bandwagon, having logged in the other night and seen there was literally one ticket left, which wasn't too useful for me and my dad that wanted to go with me. So Wickham, their state of play at the moment, they've beaten Bolton and drawn at Bristol Rovers. They haven't conceded a goal in either of those two games, so they'll be happy with their start of the season. It's our first competitive trip there since 2002. Division 2 win, and Sim, without looking at the bit on the script where it says who scored that day?
Oh, I'm going to guess that it was Jamie Cureton and Darius Henderson.
Thank you very much.
This is a complete guess.
Thank you very much for not playing along with my guessing game there. But yeah, Darius Henderson and Jamie Cureton on the score sheet that day, so you get a sense of how long ago that was. And from a, I suppose, one era cycling through many several eras into the current one, and who do we want to see play on Tuesday night? I think the likes of Elise, Novakovic, Puskas, McIntyre, Morrison and Walker are the names that I've sort of earmarked that I'd like to see. I think Walker just deserves a chance, given the fact that we're expecting Raphael, once he's match sharp and everything, to sort of leap both Virginia and Walker. I'd like to see him at least get an outing to prove himself before, you know, the inevitable happens, shall we say.
Yeah, I think this is a good opportunity for Walker to just come in and just get a bit of game time, because we don't know when we're going to need him in the future, and giving him just that little bit of game time where we can, at a time where it probably makes sense to give Virginia a rest and give Raphael just that little bit more breathing space before he comes in. It's just good to give Walker a run out, I think, and it shouldn't be the, obviously without wanting to tempt fate, it's not the most difficult game we'll have all season. If you're going to give Walker a chance in any game, it's going to be this one. No disrespect to Wickham on the difficulty, but Walker's up to the challenge, and hopefully he can redeem himself after a pretty dreadful showing against Chelsea. Otherwise, I think a mixture of youth and players that we want to properly bed into the team a little bit. As you've said, with people like McIntyre and Elise, I think both of them should start, but also people like Barrett and Novakovic, who aren't necessarily going to play a lot in the rest of the season unless they impress, and give them a chance like this to impress and show what they can do in the first team, and hopefully that'll make the whole team stronger, that they've got there, that they know that opportunities are going to come up for them, and if they do get given those opportunities, then they really can kick on from there.
Yeah, let's see how that one goes then. Obviously the tarlesden.com is your home for all the things that go on against Wickham, but let's move on away from that one and talk about the Cardiff game quickly to wrap up the show, because Sunday noon is the at home at the Mersey Stadium is the Cardiff game. It's been moved on to TV, so a nice chance for us to sort of show off to those aforementioned pundits exactly what we can do. And Cardiff have been far from convincing so far. They've had a late win over Luton on the weekend after a surprise first weekend loss at Wigan. Neil Warnock kind of setting out with a 4-2-3-1 at the moment, with our familiar face Leandro Bacuna on the bench. They're a recently relegated side, Cardiff, but I mean, you know what you're going to get from a Warnock team, and whether that favours us or not, I'm not entirely sure, because Warnock teams tend to be capable of exploiting weakness, and at the moment Reading, you would have to admit, have a few weaknesses.
Yeah, Warnock's a wily operator at this level particularly, and he's going to know that Reading are under pressure, that we need to get forward and hopefully score some goals and win. But he's going to know how to play the occasion, I guess I mean to say. Particularly, he will have done a lot of, I'm sure, very tight scouting on how we're going to set up. We're very likely just going to try and keep the ball quite a lot and dominate possession, but Warnock knows how to play against teams like this. He's obviously come up against people like Yap Stam in the last couple of years, and he knows how to counter that. Even when we had a really good 45 against Cardiff in our last home game against them, 2-0 up at half time, playing some pretty good football, he knows how to change games around. He knows how to manage situations like that, and I'm sure that even if we do have a good start, even if we have a good 60 minutes, 70 minutes, he's going to know how to get Cardiff back into the game. So it is going to be a real slog across the whole 90 minutes.
Yeah, well, I suppose one of the saving graces for Reading fans going into this is that it's got a reasonable level of unpredictability to it, because we don't know how we're going to line up. I don't think the Wickham game is going to be a sign of how we line up, unless obviously, you know, Puskas starts and scores a hat-trick at Wickham, he'll start against Cardiff. But that formation that we play in, the players that are going to be playing are new to the Championship to a large extent. They're going to be difficult for Warnock to sort of monitor. I imagine that Warnock is a sort of manager who, you know, does his homework and does his research quite well, and that's going to be difficult to do against Reading at the moment. So we have to hope that that plays into our favour, that the unpredictability doesn't just result in a complete lack of team fluidity and results in some decent moments of skill. So it's a difficult one to call, the Reading game, or the Cardiff game rather. Nonetheless, that is our task to end the show, Sim. The Prediction League finally has some points on the board after we all failed to get the Sheffield Wednesday defeat. Wim and Johnny Williams picked up 3 points with 2-1 defeats against Hull. We both went for a draw. Westy did as well. And then Ollie went for the away win, which didn't come off. So for the Cardiff game, what are you going to say for a prediction?
I'm going to be uncharacteristically negative, which I know I know isn't exactly to my character, at least going by last season. I think Cardiff are going to edge it. Probably a 2-1 reverse again. The thing is, we're capable of scoring some good goals at the moment. You look at our goal against Sheffield Wednesday and our goal against Hull as well, and we are capable of finding the net in actually quite attractive fashion, I guess, and also the goals against Chelsea as well, of course. But we just leak goals too much at the back, and particularly if we carry on with Moore on the right and Miazga on the left. It's things like that that Cardiff can exploit, whether it's from set pieces or from open play. They're going to be able to score a few goals and just shut up shop at the other end. So 2-1 for me to Cardiff.
I'm going to go 2-1 to Reading on kind of the basis that you've said there. But basically, I do just see this game being a very scrappy game. And it's a midday Sunday game as well. Probably not going to have a vibrant atmosphere. Let's face it, even with Club 1871 and a decent amount of Cardiff travelling fans, early kickoffs just don't tend to have that good an atmosphere. So I think it's probably going to start quite slowly. Reading, having started very badly in the last two games, are probably going to be very watchful how they start. Cardiff, as I say, relying on the last-minute winner against Luton on the weekend, probably will, you know, just show them that they've got a bit of something, but there might be a bit of nerves there. And it's a difficult one to see how it's going to turn out, but I think the second half it might just kick into gear and a couple quick fire goals, and I think Reading will just about have enough. I do think Lucas Jow, the new striker, I think he's very capable of hitting the ground running and putting away some goals. He's got 2-2 this season already, so let's hope that he can continue. And this show will be back after that game to bring in episode 199, which of course will precede the 200th episode, as you can imagine, and that'll be a bit different. So keep an eye out for that. That's in a couple of weeks' time, but 199 next week. And Sim, thank you very much for joining us for 198, and hopefully a couple of wins to enjoy this week.
Yep, thanks for having me. I'll be at the Wickham game on Tuesday, so hopefully a good chance to see Reading winning in Buckinghamshire.
Yes, hopefully we'll be marching on triumphantly into the round of the cup where Premier League teams enter and traditionally we exit. So hopefully a nice trip on Tuesday, hopefully not too stressful. We certainly don't really need a first team playing extra time and penalties at this stage of season. And then Cardiff on the TV on Sunday, it's going to be a very interesting one. Certainly no excuses for missing it. Unless, of course, you happen to be sunning yourself. But even in hotter climes and nicer climes than the UK at the moment, these sort of TV games manage to reach out there. So hopefully everyone can tune into that. Hopefully everyone can join us next week for episode 199 of the Tarlesden podcast. And all that leaves me to say is thank you for listening and come on your arse. Leave a trail. Even when it's
you smile. Funny how the crowds always be.